Welcome to Dancin' Moon Songcast. I'm Scott Simpson, casting from Dancin' Moon Studio in Spearfish Canyon on the north end of the Black Hills of South Dakota, right on the banks of the Spearfish Creek. If you'd like to follow along, you can download a free PDF of my lyric book from scottsimpsonmusic.com/lyrics. And of course, you can find links to all my music there as well. So let's get casting and find out what song we're going to talk about this time. Well, welcome to another poetry episode in our 10-episode poetry series on Dancin' Moon Songcast. We normally talk about songwriting and songs, and we've taken a 10-week slice of time to take a look at poems from my selected poems, written between 1989 and 2009, so a little 20-year stretch there. Today we're gonna take a look at three poems that all sort of cluster around the idea of connection with the natural environment, and I could, you know, honestly, I could probably do the entire series on this. I've written a lot of poetry coming out of connections with the natural environment, particularly the Black Hills area where I live, and all of that. It's a real fruitful topic for me, I suppose. But we're going to take a look at three that connect in one way. A couple of them having to do with winter time, which we are kind of fast approaching official winter. You know, winter in South Dakota sometimes starts as early as late August. But then, of course, we'll get little slices of sometimes we get little slices of summer in mid-January. So anyway, that's the nice thing about the natural environment in this area. We, you know, we really never know exactly what to expect, but there's always a good connection. So we're going to take a look at three poems, a short one and a couple of kind of medium length ones, and talk just a little bit about it. That'll be our episode for this week. This first one is the oldest of the three. It's called Artifacts. Artifacts. I'm burying my head deep into a distant May. A stretch from this late January, where an unseasonable warmth has reawakened these lilacs beneath my skin. They sprawl varicose, purple clusters across my forearms, around the backs of my shoulders. Come close, it's on my breath, the soil radiant but cool, just three handfuls down, water from a spring melt filtering deep to the roots. The china doll's broken foot, spent shell casings, and chimney stones marked by old fires have torn my nails, wedged the nutrients deep into my fingers, where growth begins. So, this poem, Artifacts, I don't know exactly what year it was written, but I do recall I have a lot of experiences from very young digging in dirt, spending time looking for things, digging. I don't know if I was digging for treasures or, you know, there was a time when I wanted to be an archaeologist, digging and finding interesting stones. A couple of things are mentioned in the poem, China doll's broken foot. I distinctly remember finding a broken off leg and boot of a China doll. One was probably came from the late 1800s, and spent shell casings found in the dirt, stones with interesting markings on them. Some that looked like they had burn marks on them, things like that. But one of the most remarkable experiences in dirt that I recall was, I grew up, and I've mentioned this before, in York, Nebraska. And one of the things about York, Nebraska is lots and lots of lilacs that come out. One of the first things that starts to bloom in the spring, and when they really get going, the smell fills the whole town. You smell the lilacs, and I recall being a young child sitting underneath big, huge, sprawling lilac bushes, and digging in dirt, and the smell of the lilacs. And the feel of the dirt as you dig, the coolness as you dig deeper, finding things, rocks, little bits and pieces of dolls or of china, broken things, broken glass, all these treasures that are treasures when you're a child, you know, shiny, interesting, sparkly things that seem to have a story behind them that you'd love to know, but you know you'll never know. And those things in this poem get planted into the body, into that tactile sense of dirt, of soil, combined with the smell of lilacs. And so in this poem, we're far from that. We're in a mid-January, but in a mid-January like we have quite often here in South Dakota, where suddenly we've got 70-degree weather and a warmth on the breeze and the capacity for something like that to reawaken those sense memories from an entire life, but stretching all the way back to childhood, bringing up the sense of having your hands in soil, of the smell of lilacs, like it's embedded in your body, as a part of your body. And I think that probably has informed my philosophy of life in so many ways. The idea of the human body, of my human body being a product of the earth, of the dirt, a product of the organic material of the planet, and the connection there, the interconnection there, and so it's a poem about how our bodies can hold memory, earth memory about growing things, about bits and pieces of humanity that have been broken, cast aside, and have gone back into dirt, and lay there buried, with secret stories, just waiting to be found. It really has to do with a story that the natural environment, the earth itself, is trying to tell, and the utter lack of separation between human story and earth story, because they're tied together, they're one and the same. They're not, as the Western mind has thought for, I don't know, a few centuries. We're not separate from this place. We're not at odds with the wild, with the natural environment. We are part of it. We have grown up out of it, and not to hopefully not ever grown out of it, not ever left it, because to whatever degree, I think, to whatever degree that we leave it, we have left and lost a part of ourselves. So that's artifacts. I want to the next poem is a slightly longer one. It comes in three sections. It's not a long poem. It's a little longer than artifacts. But this one once again sticks with that that idea of the natural environment, but also the natural environment in the midst of winter, which is an interesting thing because it seems that the winter season is a season of sleep, a season of dormancy, a season in which the living things are not dead, but they are at rest, not especially active. So this poem is called Midwinter Hike, and it comes in three sections. Midwinter Hike. One. Home is where I'm too whole, and each step in any direction is the losing of something. I replace the pieces with something new, light on the crusted snow, leg bone of a deer gnawed twice by coyote and myself, trying to get at the marrow of things. I want to return satiated, full of something I hadn't missed before. So spent, I'm unable to sleep for dreaming. Two. Pine cones grow warm on the side of this hill where sun has drawn back the snow. The dry grass, the needles glow with an idea of what spring is, memory and prophecy. The cones open their wooden petals, and seeds are always hidden near the center, waiting for fire. Only wind and the winter birds' chatter can speak so patiently of the snow, of the slow hand of sun, opening up everything a bit at a time, unhurried. Three. I'm not alone out here. Someone dogs me at every turn. I fumble to recall the name as I stumble home, carrying words so as not to jostle them into a trite retelling. Who is it? I spin. Who's there? Out this far, it's impossible to be alone. So once again, I think this interconnectedness with all things, with the natural environment, with the other living things. We have, like in artifacts, we have other artifacts. We have light on crusted snow. We have leg bone of a deer. And these elements, these things that that I have found. If you've gone hiking, if you're paying attention, you'll find these signs of what has been going on while you weren't there. Bones left. Nod. Nod by Coyote. And then again, nod by the speaker in the poem. Of course, metaphorically, nod. I recall finding bones all through my life as a child. Finding also feathers. Finding also bits and pieces of fur. I have another poem about finding a tuft of fur snagged on a barb, on a barbed wire fence. The stories that are told of a drama that's happened among living things. Often a drama that's led to death, that's led to a feeding of some sort. And that brings things back to a very base elemental position of being alive, needing certain things, food, water, air, shelter. And about this winter hike, the first line, home is where I'm too whole, and each step in any direction is the losing of something. I think that's a conscious decision. The safety, the comfort of being at home for us human beings means all my needs are taken care of. There's nothing, you know, I'm just kind of here. I've got my entertainment. I've got my food. I've got my water. I've got my heat. I've got comfort. I've got a nice, comfortable place to sit. Choosing in the middle of winter to go out means giving up something, relinquishing something, letting go of something in hopes of picking up something else. And that's where the attentiveness comes, watching for the bone, watching for the light on the crusted snow. Wanting to return satiated, wanting to return not having been more emptied out, but having emptied oneself to go on this midwinter hike and having taken in so much more, having been out, to come home satiated, full of something I hadn't missed before, so spent I'm unable to sleep for dreaming. See, these things that we come in contact with, and this goes back to artifacts too, digging in the dirt, walking through the forest, moving through the natural world, seeing the bone, seeing the dead carcass, seeing the marks left here and there by something that has happened. All of those things feed the imaginative mind. They feed the dreams. You come back after having an adventure and you take your nap or whatever, you go to sleep that night, and those things flood your dreams. And that's where that inspiration comes. That's where the significance is worked out. Who I am in the midst of this place that has borne me, this place where I live, where I am both at the mercy of whatever happens and also an active participant in all that happens around me. So, of course, the second deals with pine cones and seeds and deals with that idea that pine cones quite often, as opposed to fire being a problem, that fire opens up the cones. Fire causes the cones to release their seeds to produce more pines. Those seeds are hidden away waiting for fire. And this patience that exists in the natural world, this patience of season after season, the dropping of pine cones, until one year the lightning strikes, the fire happens, the seeds are released, and this unhurried nature of the world, of the planet that we live on, as opposed to my hurried nature, scrambling to make sure that I capture whatever I can capture, ideas, words, poems, songs, the desperation quite often that we have as artists, as human beings. Will I get enough of it out, get enough of it done before I'm gone? The world isn't like that. The pine cones are patient. The sun is patient. It'll happen in its own time. Near the end, we move into the idea of a sense of the other. I'm not alone out here. Someone dogs me at every turn. I fumble to recall the name as I stumble home carrying words, so as not to jostle them into a trite retelling. Who is it I spin? Who's there? Out this far, it's impossible to be alone. I think for me, that's this spiritual sense of presence. And I would say Creator, I would say God, but I would also say this, a big piece of this is what I would call that healthy agnosticism of knowing very precisely what I know, or at least what I believe, and then turning and knowing that there is so much that I don't know. And I think for me, I'll talk just specifically for me, and this might be the case for many people. What I know has shrunk. Not that I've gotten dumber but I think the more you live, the more you realize how little you know. And so what I know, what I am certain of, what I am absolutely deeply in faith about has shrunk into a small core. And it's not an issue of being, of having the rest of everything be this dark, fearful thing. It's recognizing that not knowing is not bad. That being agnostic is honest, saying, I don't know for certain, and I'm okay with that, because what I do know, the core of what I do know, or what I do believe, tells me that I'm okay, I'm safe. For me, at the core, that is this sense of a benevolent, loving universe. A benevolent, loving creation and creator. At the core, there's much that I don't know about. But for me, at least in my view of this place and myself in it, to feel that that the created world has a nature that is fundamentally benevolent. What is valuable is relationship, community, working together, finding one's place in the grand scheme, and knowing it and fulfilling it and being that is fundamentally the calling, if you are a living thing, to feel that and to know that, at least to believe it strongly enough to call that faith, imbues everything else that is unknowable, that is unknown, that is mystery still, it imbues it with that nature, that I don't have to be fearful of the unknown. I can rest in the idea that that what I know at my core about my own nature and about the nature of this place, what I know means that the rest of it is not just darkness, is not just loss, is not just pain or emptiness. And so I think for me, that moving through the natural environment in that sense is what makes it both humbling and a learning experience and something that relieves anxiety, which of course there's been a lot of research around that, hiking, being out in the natural environment, immersing yourself in the natural environment is one of the things that can relieve us most assuredly of anxiety and depression. And so that's a big piece of it for me. So we'll move on to the last poem, which is similar in many ways, and I'm sure you'll see that. This one, though, as you know, I have been my entire professional life an educator of one sort or another, a teacher. I taught high school for a number of years, taught at college and university level for many years, and I've now for the last 13 years or so, I have worked with schools and educators and teachers, so teaching teachers. But it's always been about teaching. So this last poem was one that I wrote when we first, probably within the first year or two of us having moved here to Spearfish. I was teaching at the university here, and quite often before teaching, I would drive out into the hills and take a few moments in the natural environment to get centered, to prepare myself for the teaching. So this is called Before You Teach, and it kind of takes the form of instruction. These are instructions before you teach. It is, once again, a three-part poem. Before you teach. One. A few hours before class, drive out Tinton Road until you leave any traffic behind you. The trees will not distract you. They will stand perfectly still. Here, you must leave the beaten path and join them along an ancient road left overgrown. Wind your way among them to a shaded spot and kill your engine. From here, you travel on foot. Speed is no longer your goal. Each step is a lesson. Two. Here, dig into the hard dirt bank. Find egg-shaped rocks fractured by the weight of millennia, and know that a thing, whether fertile or not, left long unhatched, turns to stone. Think, as you walk, of the mountain lion waiting patiently for a sign of weakness. Know that hunger is his nature, and that you have come here with only a pocket knife and your senses. See, he has left for you a sign, claw marks in the mud hole, long and deep. Count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, straight as a treble clef left empty and waiting for your half of his composition. 3. Coming home, roll down all the windows and drive fast, letting the dust filter in, sprinkle, flavor your books, your papers, even your skin. The sweat of the journey will make it stick, and you will taste it in your teeth, even as you speak to your students. So, I would quite often drive out into the hills up Tenton Road, which is very dusty if you've ever driven Tenton Road and with your windows open. You know that sense of being covered with dust, even into your teeth. And if you know anything about the Black Hills, you know that there are lots and lots of old logging roads that have been, some are still open, some have been limited to non-motorized travel, some have been closed off completely, and are in various stages of being overgrown. At the time, this was probably 1997 or so, at the time more of those roads were still slightly open, and I had a 1984 Bronco four-wheel drive that I would drive. I had my books and my papers and things, notes and stuff for my teaching, spread out on the back seat, and I would drive up Tenton Road, and I would drive back into an area a little ways off the actual gravel road onto an old, beginning to become overgrown fire trail pathway. Stop, get out, sometimes take a book or some papers with me, and walk further in until I felt very, very, very far away from the university, the traffic, the people, anything other than the trees. The trees and my wondering about mountain lions and other things, you know, deer, and raccoons, porcupines. And I did on one of these trips did meet, it was a different trip. I didn't have my books. I had my dogs, but I did run into a mountain lion. And so they're out there and I've seen mountain lions before, but that always makes you think about how you could so very easily, with all your importance, with all of your education, with all of your knowledge, all of your philosophy, you could very easily just be a meal, which I think is a healthy realization to have as part of, once again, the family of this planet, in which all living things are either needing to eat or giving in to being eaten. And that is what being a living organism is. It's either eating or being eaten. And that's not a dark, ugly, eat or be eaten kind of statement. It's just the reality of this beautiful cycle of of living things that we are a part of. And to whatever degree we forget that as human beings, we think of ourselves as somehow apart from that, above all that, I think we lose a big piece of ourselves, a big piece of who we are. And as a teacher, to lose that piece is to be diminished as a teacher, is to be not the teacher that you could be. And I think that's why I wrote these instructions before you teach, that these are important lessons to know. Important lessons to know that we are collaborators with the trees and with the streams and with the wind and with the rocks and with the mountain lions. We are collaborators in this thing called life. And that if we lose that, if we lose the grit in our teeth, if we lose the dirt, the dust of the planet embedded into our skin, if we lose that, then we are diminished. As human beings, as teachers, certainly. And so it's an important lesson. It was an important lesson to me. It was a lesson that we learned, I think, in moving here. We had never before been as drawn into and as embedded in the natural environment as we were the day we moved here. I mean, we couldn't stop ourselves from driving out into the hills and finding secluded places to just be in the trees, among the canyon walls with the sun coming down, any time of year, whatever season. And so those were the lessons that we learned, and those are the lessons that I tried in one way or another to embody then for my students in whatever we were doing or learning for the day. And it was a nice thing for me to think about that, to occasionally actually literally have some dust from Tenton Road on the papers that I returned to them, so that they knew that I had gone into the hills to consider what had been written, the work that they had done. So there we have it, three poems about connecting with the natural environment, and very specifically, all three, very much the dirt, digging in the dirt, finding those round rocks, finding the artifacts, finding the memory, sense memory that's been buried since childhood of things, the coolness of the dirt as you dig down deeper and deeper, the things that the dirt holds for us, the seeds that then are planted within us from being a part of this amazing planet. So you can find all my music, all my lyrics at scottsimpsonmusic.com. Stream them on Spotify, on iHeartRadio. You stream them on Apple Music, iTunes, anywhere else that you like to stream music. I do have a new album that's coming out in January 2021 that I'm super excited about, called Keys to My Head. I think it is just almost completely done. I'll be here in the next couple of weeks sending those files in to be published, and so they'll be coming out, I believe, around January 15th, 2021. So I'll be saying more about that in upcoming episodes. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you get a chance. We're just after, in my time, we're just after Thanksgiving and Christmas is coming, and it is unbelievably beautiful, sunny, and warm outside here in the Black Hills, which is bringing up all these wonderful dirt digging sorts of memories for me. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to do these poems. I hope that you get a chance wherever you are at to get your hands in some dirt. That's important. It's elemental. It's fundamental to who we are as human beings. So do that and find yourself in the dirt. Stay tuned and be well.